Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 89 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling Fascinating Things 2, a conversation with Craig Morris, Director of the USDA Western Wheat Quality Lab. In episode 88, the first half of my interview with Morris, you heard him describe efforts that led to the creation of a soft durum variety, as well as research looking to improve the taste of wheat varieties. In this episode, Morris and I have a fascinating discussion about the origins of club wheat and how breeders and cereal chemists, not its club head, have made it special. We also talk about why soft white wheat aims for a different slice of the market as more of a jack-of-all-trades wheat. At one point during our conversation ahead, Morris defines the role of the federally funded quality lab he leads as bringing solutions to American agriculture. I can't think of any better definition for the facility, but nobody can do anything without resources. And Morris said lack of resources have been an ongoing reality. This year, however, thanks in part to the Washington Grain Commission, the Western Wheat Quality Lab was the recipient of $1 million used to buy new equipment. Ahead, Morris talks about what that's meant for the lab. But first, 2018 has been a year of anniversaries. The Washington Grain Commission is in the midst of its 60th anniversary, with its precursor, the Washington Wheat Commission, officially established in April 1958. As you'll hear ahead, the Western Wheat Quality Lab is also having an anniversary. Although many people see any government spending as a boondoggle, I'm frankly amazed at the prescience of farmers who lobbied for funding a wheat quality lab in the Northwest. The government does some things well, and certainly the creation of the Western Wheat Quality Lab is one of them. Morris, who has been researching the history of the unit, has not come up with an exact opening date. He believes the facility became active in stages.
Probably in this day and age, they would call it a soft launch or something. It didn't just apparently start on any given day. And we're researching it currently, partly because it's more or less seems to be our 70th anniversary here. Nevertheless, as far as we can tell, probably somewhere around 1944, 1945, the Washington wheat growers, and I believe possibly the Oregon wheat growers, but certainly went to the Washington legislature requesting appropriation of funds to Washington State College, of course, at the time, as well as what is now the Agricultural Research Service with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. I have found that the first annual report of the Western Wheat Quality Lab was made in 1948, including the 1947 and 1948 wheat crops. And so that's occurred uninterrupted since that time.
All right. So it's either the 70th or the 71st or something like that. Who were the directors of the Western Wheat Quality Lab? How many have there been?
There have been three. The first one was Mark Barmore, and he had already been seemingly in the system, quote, the system being, I believe he may have been working for the Hard Wheat Quality Lab in Manhattan, Kansas, with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and perhaps was reassigned out here to Pullman, Washington. Not exactly sure about the details. Nevertheless, he served uninterrupted until 1968, at which time Gordon Rubenthaler, who is still living down the hill, as we say, in Clarkston, Washington, took over in 68 and, again, served in that capacity until 1989 when I took over.
And what were you doing in 1989?
Well, I actually had graduated from Kansas State University with a PhD and had come out here to work with a gal by the name of Kay Simmons, who some people know if they've been knocking around long enough. She was Deputy Administrator for Agricultural Research Service. And so I came out here to do a postdoc on, of all subjects, pre-harvest sprouting and soft white wheat. So still a relevant subject, I guess, to all the listeners.
So is it true that white bran wheat sprouts more easily than red bran wheat?
As a very generalization, that's absolutely correct. Now, it's not to the last variety. The primary prevention or resistance to pre-harvest sprouting has to do with seed dormancy. And in general, white wheats have no seed dormancy at maturity. There are a couple of varieties that are quite unique that do, but that contrasts red wheats, which again, some have no dormancy at maturity and would be just as equally sprout susceptible. But in general, most red wheats do have the seed dormancy, which protects them against sprouting.
And is it true that soft white sort of migrated to this region of the country because it so rarely rains at harvest?
No, from what I understand, the very first wheats that came into Washington came in with, you know, white settlers that either moved up from California. And so dating further back, those wheats were of Spanish origin. And they were white club wheats. There also seems to be, I'm not sure if it was the Hudson Bay Company, but some of those first settlers, of course, brought wheats with them. But I understand that the club wheats were of Spanish origin.
Yeah, I read that too. Bob Allen's book.
Yeah.
So there are, what, five quality labs in the United States? Is that right?
Four. Four federal USDA labs spread across the country. Each of us are in one of the, you could say, primary geographical production zones. So the Northern Plains, the Southern Plains. So that's a kind of separates the spring wheats from spring and durum wheats from the winter wheats. And then one back in Ohio that deals with the eastern soft red winter wheats.
And they weren't all established at the same time?
Now, as far as I can tell, the first two, which were the hard winter and soft winter labs in Kansas and Ohio, respectively, were established, I believe, in 1938.
So this lab out here, I mean, why wasn't it established in Pendleton, for instance, or Moscow?
That's a good point. And I'm not sure. I'm going to assume that probably since the Washington wheat growers were leading the charge on this, they probably wanted it located at, you know, the experiment station, Washington State College, Pullman, Washington.
So how many researchers call the Western Wheat Quality Lab home?
One permanent scientist, which is yours truly. We currently have a support scientist who almost everybody in the industry knows, Doug Engel. And then we currently have a sort of a senior postdoctoral fellow, Alicia Kashonis.
There's just the three of you here,
mm-hmm.
and then support staff. How large is the staff here?
Yeah, we have somewhere between, half a dozen to eight permanent ARS technicians. A few of those are on actual 9-month appointments, a little bit like school teachers. They get the summer off, get rested up for the onslaught of new samples upon harvest.
How does the advent of private companies change things for you, or does it?
I would say that it hasn't changed things much directly, although anyone would clearly accept that it's had a huge impact on Eastern Washington agriculture in terms of the varieties that are available to growers, the number of varieties that are available to growers, the whole sort of seed supply, seed sales, promotion has obviously affected things. I mean, I would say on one level, certainly it's a good thing. I think the more breeding activity, whether it be public or private, is good for growers. Ostensibly, new varieties are released because they have some new advantage, typically more yield, of course, but it could also be better agronomics, better disease resistance, et cetera. I don't think there's really a choice between should it be public, should it be private. I think at least currently, in the past few years, and certainly I think in the foreseeable future, public and private breeding companies will in a sense coexist and compete with each other, certainly for acres. Absolutely.
What's happened to your funding over the past 15 years since the private companies have come in? Has the government looked and said, hey, we don't need to give so much to these guys because the privates are doing more of the research?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say as a general model, funding for the Agricultural Research Service goes in long periods of flat funding with infrequent periodic increases. So, for example, the 30 years I've been here, we've had one or two significant increases in funding, which have been largely due to grower stakeholder support and congressional appropriation. But then after, say, that step up, what typically is the scenario is then you're on a long glide path of slow inflation and attrition until then, without a new infusion of appropriations, you get to the point where it's difficult to maintain your mission.
But you did have an infusion of capital here recently, didn't you? Tell us about that.
Yeah, we did. In fact, there was a couple things that are certainly noteworthy. One is ARS leadership at the request of, I believe, is largely stakeholders, but primarily Washington farmers, Washington wheat growers, allocated $1 million last fiscal year to essentially re-equip the Western Wheat Quality Lab. We a little bit jokingly say it wasn't a once-in-a-lifetime, it was a once-in-two-lifetime occurrence, and it's really just breathed new life into the lab. There were pieces of equipment, for example, some mills and some baking ovens and some things that were old when I took over in 89. And so that's really been an outstanding achievement. The second thing is there have been some very modest increases in appropriations. I believe all four wheat quality labs and, to my understanding, also the malt lab in Madison, Wisconsin, received a little bit of a kick up in appropriations this current fiscal year.
Do the directors of the quality labs get together periodically and discuss what's going on in their various regions?
We do. There's no sort of formal program. We typically see each other at our professional scientific society annual meeting, which is the American Association of Cereal Chemists. We're in ongoing contact with each other. Some of us have collaborative research projects. We're typically reading each other's scientific papers, reviewing manuscripts, checking in on each other's graduate students, et cetera.
And the reason I ask that question is because I'm curious whether these other quality labs have the close relationship that this lab has with their growers and commission.
I wouldn't be able to accurately comment on that. I'm sure they all have good relationships. But I will say, maybe this is more opinion than fact, but I believe the Western Wheat Quality Lab may be maybe the best of the four, to be honest with you, regardless of kind of are we better or not. I can say, which is factual, we have an excellent, outstanding relationship with the growers, with the Washington Grain Commission, with WAG, and with the university. I mean, we're guests here at the university. I'm a USDA employee. All of my people here are USDA employees. And so we're housed in a university building here, the Western Wheat Quality Lab. And it really is kind of a wonderful example of really a seamless cooperation between state and federal entities.
So I'm familiar with the cooperation that you have with the Washington Grain Commission. What does that cooperation mean to you, to this outfit?
Yeah, that's also a good question. I think there's at least two very prominent things. One is we are here as a USDA federally supported lab to bring solutions to American agriculture. And so, obviously, we work very specifically on wheat grain and flour quality. We work with wheat breeders to develop new varieties. That's good for growers, but it's also good for the milling and baking industry. It's good for domestic consumers, and it's good for the consumers that buy and value our wheat overseas. The second, I think, very, very important part of the collaboration is that working so closely with the growers and the Grain Commission, it really ensures that what we do and how we spend our appropriations is the most relevant research possible. In other words, the taxpayer and the growers are getting the most bang for the buck.
Do any of the other quality labs put together a preferred variety brochure like you help us do out here?
Yeah. Again, I'm not exactly sure what the current status is, but I do know that at least a couple of the labs are very interested. And when I say the labs, I mean the collective, you know, growers, wheat commissions, labs, are very interested in establishing a system very similar to what we have here in the PNW. Whether they currently have something set up, or whether they're a year or two away, or whether they, you know, are going to be obliged to morph it into something that resembles our system, that I wouldn't be able to tell you here today. But again, I would also, it kind of comes back to your question about, you know, how close do we work with the industry, the growers, and in some sense addressing some of the aspects of that interaction. The Western Wheat Quality Lab has really been, I would say, the national leader on a number of fronts. We established the Pacific Northwest Wheat Quality Council more than 20 years ago. That has been held up as the model for how breeding, cereal chemistry, wheat quality, growers, seedsmen, how that they all interface to essentially bring higher quality product to growers, and again, then that filters down to ultimately the consumer. The second example is what we were just talking about, and that's the preferred variety pamphlet. That's has been held up as a model system of how growers can partner with high quality varieties and promote high quality wheat and really deliver high quality product, whether it's overseas or domestically, to our customers.
This isn't a question on my list, but I'm wondering, what makes clubs so special? I Tom Mick, the former CEO of the Washington Grain Commission, used to say that the Japanese think of club as medicine. What is the medicine in club?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the first part of the answer is, if we think strictly in terms of genetics, club wheat really refers to the shape of the head. It has that compact head. That's the result of just a single major gene. It really has nothing to do with quality per se. So the rest of the answer, if you will, has to do with what wheat breeders and cereal chemists have done over the last 70 years. And so we have taken club wheat associated with this club head, and we have bred into it over the years all of the desirable traits for, in this case, the Japanese market. And so if we want to drill down a little deeper, it has to do with things like, again, soft kernel texture, very high milling performance, high milling quality, very weak gluten, exceptional cookie and sponge cake baking. But they aren't directly associated with the club wheat. It's just that we have built in all of those really exceptional quality traits into this club wheat vehicle.
Could one argue that we will do the same with soft white over time?
I think probably not. And the reason I respond that way is because we recognize that for club wheat to have value, it needs to have this very specific portfolio, if you will, of quality traits. It needs to be very consistent. They need to be very high in a soft wheat quality sense, so that it maintains both its identity and its value. Soft white common, on the other hand, of course, is the much more majority of the soft white crop. It's probably what, at least in excess of 90% relative to club. It needs to kind of be a little bit of a jack of all trades, and not that we expect it to make bread, because we already have outstanding Washington varieties that make exceptional bread, hard red spring, hard red winter varieties. But from cookies to cakes to steam breads, flat breads, blended with noodles. You know, soft white is truly a very highly versatile wheat. And that's why, again, it really needs to have a little bit broader mix of quality attributes. There are certainly, I think, you know, going back to one of the things that the Western Wheat Quality Lab, I think, has been well known for, and that's been our role in the Overseas Varietal Analysis Program with U.S. Wheat Associates, another very, very close collaborator and strong supporter. In many years, all the years of conducting the OVA, this Overseas Varietal Analysis Program for U.S. Wheat Associates, we have strongly reinforced the fact that there are a lot of uses, yes, particularly in East Asia, for soft white that would have stronger gluten. Now, a couple minutes ago I mentioned that, you know, one of the hallmarks of club wheat that we purposefully design is for clubs to have very, very weak gluten. Many of the products that club is used in, strong gluten would just impart undesirable texture. It would make products tough or chewy, and that's not what we want. But conversely, there are some products, some uses, I should say, of soft white where stronger gluten is desirable and actually makes a better product, especially when coupled with that white bran, because we generally have very, very good color relative to other competitor wheats around the world. In closing, I would just really like to strongly thank the wheat industry, thank the wheat growers. You go any place in the wheat industry in the United States and the Pacific Northwest, and Washington in particular, is renowned for its support, its forward thinking, its close work with, you know, collaboration with universities and USDA. And I just want to thank the growers for all their continued support.
Wonderful. What a way to end.
At the top of the episode, Morris and I were talking about anniversaries. For the record, 2019 will mark his 30th year leading the Western Wheat Quality Lab. As Morris made clear in his comments, club wheat is special, but not necessarily for the reason we think. That is, its club-shaped head. Pacific Northwest farmers are also unique, but probably less so for their farming prowess than their talent for coming together to achieve goals. Goals like the creation of the Western Wheat Quality Lab. I hope you've enjoyed episode 89 of Wheat All About It, or what I've entitled, Fascinating Things Too, a conversation with Craig Morris, director of the USDA Western Wheat Quality Lab. Please join me again next time for another episode of Wheat All About It.
You think we're simple, you think we're not right. Look at your cities and ask yourself who's right. We've got country and you've got crime. We've got green and you've got grime. Let there be no doubt, we have what it takes to till the soil until our back aches. Just give us a break and don't be so rude. We love the work and you love the food.
We feed you.